Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is, are you happy with the reward and recognition you get at work? My guest is Judy Klippen, Master Life Coach, Facilitator, Trainer, and author from Johannesburg. Welcome, Judy. Welcome back on the show.
Thank you, Mariëtte. Thank you very much for having me.
To our listeners, after our conversation, Judy will give us her three tips on getting the best from yourself, and then it will be fun question time. Judy, you've just published your book, Make Work Work For You. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's very exciting.
Before we dive into our topic and take a closer look at your book, could you tell us more about your work as a master life coach and author?
So I have been coaching since 2007, when I was trained in America by Martha Beck. And it's interesting because I started thinking that I wanted to coach people around their work and around getting the best out of their work and being happier in their workplace. But then life, as it does, took me in a different path. And I developed a very passionate interest in working with, adult children. And an adult child it comes from the term adult child of alcoholics. And it was coined by a psychologist called Dr. Janet Wojtyc in the 1980s. Who started to notice that many of her patients who had grown up with alcoholic parents had very similar characteristics. Now, I noticed that many of my clients shared those characteristics, even if they hadn't grown up with alcoholic parents. So my definition of an adult child is anyone who had a childhood who was that was inconsistent or unpredictable in some way or for some time, which really is pretty much everyone who grew up in this country, I think. And so most of us share at least some of the characteristics of adult children. And those include adult children guess what normal is. So we feel like everyone else got the instruction manual to life and we have to make it up as we go along. Mm. We lie when it's just as easy to tell the truth. So we pretend to be okay when we aren't. Pretend to be able to do something when we actually can't. We judge ourselves without mercy. So very hard on ourselves, constantly seek approval and affirmation. We're either super responsible or super irresponsible, and often we're super responsible to other people and super irresponsible towards ourselves. And there are a whole lot of other characteristics, but those ones in particular led me through my work with my clients on the adult child phenomenon and the tools and the information that I developed to help them. Then made me realize that so many of the characteristics of adult children and the ones that I just mentioned make us very vulnerable to developing burnout. And so my next kind of step was then helping my clients to understand and myself, having suffered from burnout a few times myself, what makes us vulnerable to burnout. And my theory about burnout is that it's partly personality driven, but it's also that we get burnout from doing too much of the wrong things, the things that are wrong for us. And we do too many of the wrong things because we can't say no, we can't ask for help, we lie when it's just as easy to tell the truth, etc. We guess what normal is, we constantly seek approval and affirmation, etc. So those are my kind of key areas of interest, adult children, and how they show up in work and in love, and then burnout. And then as I was working more and more with my clients with burnout, it became apparent that a lot of how we are and the kind of coping mechanisms that we developed as children show up in our lives, obviously, and specifically at work, and aren't always very helpful for us at work. And so then I kind of moved into back to where I was originally thinking I was going to be, which was helping people at work. And now it is with the understanding of trying to help people understand how they can get in their own way by not asking for help and those other things and driving themselves to burnout can impede their experience of the workplace. And so I'm currently mixing all of those things up and helping people to understand how they show up in the workplace better and identify where they would like to change how they show up so that they can improve their experience of work. That was a long...
Yeah, you know, all of this hangs together so beautifully. And I'd just like to mention to the listeners the names of your previous two books, which they will see fit in perfectly. The first one is Recover from Your Childhood, Life Lessons for the Adult Child. And as you said, I think 99% of us are adult children in this country. And then the second one is Recover from Burnout, Life Lessons to Regain Your Passion and Purpose. And then, of course, this one, Make Work Work for You. How did this book come about? And did it take you a long time to write it?
So just to say that they're a series, as you said, and they all build on each other. And the subtitle for Make Work Work for You is actually Life Lessons for the World of Work. Which I must say I rather like. I don't know who came up with it. It wasn't me, but I love it. So the book came about because, as with the other two, I think it is useful for people to have a reference, something that they can come back to over and over again and remind themselves of the tools and the information that we discuss in our coaching sessions. Also, and perhaps more importantly, coaching is a very expensive pastime, and it really is a privilege to be able to afford it. And I am very mindful of the fact that the vast majority of people in the country cannot afford coaching. And so really all of my books have been written in a style that they're very accessible, I hope, and they're very easy to apply. So people, anyone who reads it, even if English isn't their first language or even their second or third language, will be able to easily understand it and easily apply the tools and the skills that I present in the book. So they really are written as a resource for people, both who can't afford coaching, but also who maybe can afford coaching, and it's a kind of supplemental tool for them. Mm. Also, quite selfishly, I have to say, writing is the way I make sense of things. And so it helps me to make sense of things when I write. And so the book isn't only directly for my clients, but also, I suppose, indirectly, because I get more clarity about the issues that I am presenting as I write about them and do the research for them. In terms of how long it took, I started all three of my books now have started off as e-courses. I myself am an adult child, and I am super responsible to everybody else and super irresponsible towards myself. So I have to trick myself into following projects through. So what I do, or what I have done, is I offer an e-course on something that I think people will find interesting that I'm preoccupied with at the moment. And then as soon as I have a few people who have signed up for the course, then that accountability is there for me to start producing the material. And it also gives me feedback, because I send out the material once a week over a course of 2 months, say, and then people give me feedback as they're doing the e-courses. So I can see what I need to expand on, where I need to go a bit deeper, where I'm on the right track, where I'm on the wrong track, etc. And so the e-courses start, and then whenever I'm ready to, if I'm ready to, then I think maybe I'll turn this into a book. And then I speak to the publisher about it, and if she says yes, then I write more of an outline, and then I start actually kind of padding out the e-course, because the e-course probably only makes up about 5% of the book at the end of the day. So it's quite a long process, but in terms of the writing, it was probably about 6 months of sitting in front of my computer regularly. And then once the first draft goes off, then there are just many iterations of second drafts and third drafts and editing and And then eventually, when you can't even remember that you've written the book, it appears. It suddenly appears like a strange but very welcome and beautiful baby.
Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating way of working you have. And I think that also accounts for the lucidity of your writing. Because as you say, if it starts as an e-course, you have to see how it goes down with your clients.
Because, you know, it's so interesting that I often think, oh, people are going to find this so fascinating and useful. But what I'm finding fascinating isn't necessarily what other people are finding fascinating. So there have been a few ideas for e-courses, you know, a few years ago that just didn't gain any traction because it wasn't the right time, or I was interested in something that nobody else was. But when I do it this way, then I can really be sure that there is interest in it.
Judy, what would you like readers to get from this book?
So I would like readers to get a real sense of hope that work, you know, not everything at work might be wonderful, but you can change your attitude towards it or how you are engaging with the work. And also to get some really practical skills to help you to do that. So it's not an intellectual book, this. It's much more practical. It's like a self-help, self-coaching, how to make work for you book. And it's divided into 8 areas. It's built around a wheel of work, which identifies 8 areas. And you start off by doing a diagnostic of how satisfied you are in each of those areas, which then translates into you seeing how balanced or unbalanced your wheel of work is. And by the way, you can actually take that quiz on my new website. There's a little interactive quiz that you can do where you answer some questions and press enter, and then your wheel of work appears for you. And you can see where you're out of balance in the workplace. And then each area is examined in more detail in the book. So if you score low in self-awareness, for instance, you can go to the self-awareness chapter and get a bit more insight into, you know, how you can become a little bit more self-aware and what kinds of things you can be thinking about in terms of making yourself more self-aware and understanding the impact that you are having on the world and the workplace around you. So I really hope that people will gain some insight into, you know, what they need to do to make work feel better for them, and also tools and skills to do that. Whether their workplace is where they are now or a job that they're going to have in 3 or 5 years' time, the skills that they're going to develop through reading the book will be relevant in whatever workplace they find themselves, even if they're working for themselves, and also generally in life.
Yeah, I think we will include the link to the Wheel of Work quiz in the podcast notes because it feels to me that's a very good place to start. Thank you for making that available. And I was wondering if you would just like to list the 8 topics.
Sure.
Yeah, so we can get an idea.
Okay. So the 8 topics are topics that I kind of came up with as a result of working with my clients and coming up with themes of the kinds of things that don't work for people. And so they are as follows. The first is physical space. So really your physical environment, which I don't think we necessarily pay enough attention to the impact of the physical environment on our experience of work. The second, as I said, is self-awareness. So it's about being able to read how we are showing up in the workplace and being able to assess the impact that we are having on the people and the workplace around us. The third is community and relationships at work. And that's about how we get on with people, how we protect ourselves against people who might, you know, not be very nice to us, thinking about cliques, thinking about boundaries, also thinking about communication and conflict management. The next one is health and wellness, where I talk about the importance of spending our energy wisely, of understanding burnout and compassion fatigue, and how we can prevent and address those. I also talk a little bit about menopause because at that stage in my life, and so are all of my friends, where we are beginning to realize how menopause is impacting our experience of the workplace. Another area is the content of the work. So it's the actual content of the work that we are doing. How, you know, is it stimulating? Is it boring? Is it tedious? Does it have any value or meaning for us? And then there's the one that we're going to talk about today, reward and recognition. So understanding that there are many different kinds of reward and recognition. The seventh area is psychological safety. And that's really about feeling safe enough to speak up and to share ideas, and also to say, I need help, or I'm not managing, or I'm not going to have time to do that. So it's really about creating a safe container for people to be able to be honest. And part of that is, I think the imposter syndrome is in that chapter. Imposter syndrome is just such a big issue. People are talking about it more and more, and it is something that I think is related to psychological safety. And then the last area is meaning and values. So if we're doing work that doesn't feel particularly meaningful, how can we find meaning in the work that we are doing? And how aligned are our own personal values with the work that we are doing? So those are the eight areas.
Yes, I'm very curious about all of them. But today we have to stick to one. So I was intrigued by the chapter on reward and recognition, especially because reward and recognition tend to be topics that create discomfort. And we often don't know how to talk about them.
Yeah, I think that's largely actually because people tend to associate reward and recognition with money. And, you know, we're all brought up to believe that we shouldn't be talking about money. So I do think reward and recognition can be quite an uncomfortable topic for people to engage with.
Let's start with recognition in the workplace. Why is it essential to each of us?
So I think recognition is essential to each of us everywhere. Edward de Bono said that we all need to feel noticed and appreciated. And I think that's as true for at work as, you know, anywhere else in our lives. But in the workplace, it's specifically important because we need to feel as though we're on the right track with what we are doing. And so reward and recognition, or just recognition, it's a kind of a roadmap for us. They're signposts about, yes, you're doing this well, or no, you're not doing that so well. You know, we come from 12 years of school and then however many years of university, if we go to university, where we're getting constant information about how we are doing, you know, could do better. You did that well. A plus for that. B minus for that. And so it's much easier for us to calibrate where we need to be paying more or less attention to. But we get into the workplace and suddenly all of those guidelines have disappeared. We're not getting that constant feedback about where we're going wrong and where we're going right. And so often, particularly for people new and, you know, new to work, it can feel very, very untethering to be in this big world of work where you expect to do stuff, but nobody actually tells you how you're doing unless you're being shouted at, which, you know, is not really always very helpful. And so I think that just aside from the personal need and the psychological need of being seen, the recognition is so important in terms of telling us where we're going right and where we need to improve.
In Make Work Work For You, you wrote that recognition comes in different forms: feedback, money, and other forms of recognition we may not recognize. I immediately wondered whether financial rewards are more important than recognition.
So it's so interesting. That is what intuitively you would expect, that financial rewards are the most important form of recognition. But actually there have been so many studies that have been undertaken that show that a lot of workers, when they resign and they leave their jobs and they are asked why, it's more about the culture of the organization and or the lack of recognition that they feel that they are being given. That is more of an issue than their salary. And the great resignation that happened just after COVID, you know, there was that kind of sudden upsurge of people resigning and moving to other jobs. A lot of that was driven not by salary, but by working conditions or feedback or being appreciated. And money was not the main motivator for that surge of resignations.
That's very interesting. Regarding feedback, Judy, why is that important and how does it affect us if we don't get adequate feedback?
So it's the kind of the same as the recognition. Feedback is a very important guideline for us about where we're going right and where we aren't going right. And, you know, again, as I said, at school, you get all these reports, and at university, you get your marks and you get assessments and exams. And even though we hate them and they're awful, they are also a very helpful reminder about where we need to be, you know, putting more effort if we want to do better and where we are already doing well. And feedback really should be playing that role in the workplace. I mean, obviously, you don't want your manager to be giving you marks, but you want to be having not just once a year a performance review that is tied to whether or not you're going to get an increase or a bonus, because that is quite a stickish kind of feedback. It can feel very punitive and not growing, and not there's no carrot involved with that. And so I really do believe that if managers can give regular feedback, individually and collectively, it helps people enormously. So if in every team meeting you have a review, how did the week go? What did we do well at? What did we not do so well at? Who needs help with what? That is a really powerful way to get the best out of your people. In the book, I present a case study of one of my clients who just every single coaching session I had with this person was practically in tears because they were not getting any feedback on the work that they were presenting. Nobody said this is right. Nobody said this is wrong. Nobody said good job. Nobody said bad job. They had absolutely no idea whether they were on the right track or the wrong track. And it's just excruciatingly awful for people to work in that kind of vacuum. And it's not necessary, and it's not going to get the best out of that person if they have absolutely no idea what impact the work that they are doing is having.
And if you are in that position, Judy, in this vacuum, as you call it, what can you do when you don't receive adequate feedback?
So that's a tricky one because, I mean, the obvious answer is ask for it, okay? But unfortunately, it's not always that easy because the people who aren't giving you the feedback spontaneously probably are too busy or too stressed or too switched off or I don't know, whatever, to be able to give you helpful feedback when you ask for it. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't ask for it. What that does mean is that it's useful to be very clear about what kind of feedback you want and why. So rather than saying, I never get any feedback, which might be true, but isn't necessarily very specific, if you can be more specific, like, for instance, I'm wondering whether you've had a chance to read that report I submitted to you. I was slightly concerned that I hadn't entirely understood the brief, or maybe I overstepped. So if you could just give me a sense of you know, where I went right or where I went wrong, that would be very helpful. So to take responsibility and to take ownership of your desire for the feedback and to show it in a way that you're wanting the feedback, not because you want to be told how brilliant you are, but because you want to know how to do your job well or even better. And really, I don't think anybody could argue with that. But if you do have a manager who just doesn't have the bandwidth to be giving you the feedback, then maybe choose a trusted friend or colleague at, you know, at work, or maybe try and identify somebody who you could ask to mentor you, who you could then be showing your work to, and they could be helping you think through it and give you feedback along the way. Obviously, the most, you know, the first prize would be to be getting feedback from the person that you are producing the work for.
Thank you. That's sensible guidance. And then, of course, there's the old adage that says never ask a question if you're not prepared to listen to the answer. Do you have any tips on how we should receive feedback?
Yeah, I mean, that is such a good saying. I think that you have to go in with an open mind. You have to try very hard not to take it personally, but to remove yourself and see it, you know, objectively rather than subjectively if possible, and really see what you can do and what you agree with, because sometimes you might not agree with the feedback, in which case you might choose not to pay attention to whatever aspects of the feedback you don't agree with. But do try and see it as a way to improve yourself and to improve your impact on the world around you. Also, if in feedback, whether you've asked for it or whether you're receiving it, if there is a theme or a pattern in the kind of feedback that you are receiving, that is really an invitation for you to be paying attention to that and to be thinking about what are the underlying reasons for. You know, for the last three times people have given me feedback, they've said there are too many typos or I haven't understood the question properly. You've got to do some problem solving. You've got to think, how can I stop this? So maybe I get someone to proofread it before I submit it. Or maybe before I start writing something, I need to make absolutely sure that I understand what the question is. So I need to go to my manager and say, may I paraphrase this? And can you tell me whether I'm right or wrong? So it is also your responsibility to examine the feedback in a way that is going to help you as much as possible to progress along your career path.
Then we come to the form of feedback, which is money. Why do most of us find it so difficult to talk about this?
You know, it's so interesting. I think it's a social thing. I just think we all brought up to not talk about money. Nobody knows how much people earn. Nobody knows, you know, what we spend money on. And to a certain extent, I think that that's probably right, because I think that money can be such a contentious issue. But I think that why it's so hard for us to talk about it in relation to ourselves is because it's so inextricably linked with how we perceive our worth. And so if we don't get an increase, then we immediately think it's because we aren't worth an increase, even if maybe there might not be budget for an increase. And so I think it's really uncomfortable for many of us to think about putting ourselves out there and actually, you know, asking, am I worth more? Am I not worth more? But I think we need to, we really need to try and walk away from that and to not see money or our salary as a reflection of who we are and what we are worth, so much as it is a reflection of what the job that we are doing is worth to the organization that we are doing it for. Because those are two very separate things.
Yeah. In your book, you give guidelines for asking for a raise or a promotion, when one should consider that and how to do that. Could you elaborate, please?
So, yes, I think that because it is so hard to ask for money and to ask for a raise, it is something that we need to be very considered about and not too impulsive or emotional about it. And so, obviously, largely they are annual increments in salary raises, depending on budget. So if you haven't received a salary increase for a couple of years, then it might be an idea to go and speak to your manager or the HR manager and ask why that might be and ask what it is that you could do to ensure that you do get a raise. It might have nothing to do with you, or it might, in which case it's useful information for what, you know, you know what you need to do to get paid more. A promotion, I think, is slightly different because it's about asking for more responsibility and asking to be rewarded with being given more responsibility. And so in order to do that, you really do need to show how and why you are ready for that increased responsibility. So to be giving examples of what you've done well, where you've taken initiative, where you've worked well under pressure, how you've been helping your colleagues, all of those kinds of things that might be relevant to this promotion that you are looking for. It's no good just to go and say, I want a raise or I want a promotion. You need to explain why. You need to sell the idea to the person you are asking the raise of or the promotion of. You need to show them why you are worth the raise or the promotion. So it does take a little bit of thinking and a little bit of homework and preparation, and then going in your best adult state and having a conversation, not begging, you know, not going in as a child asking a parent for pocket money, but actually going in adult to adult and saying, you know, I think I deserve this because of the following reasons.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.mariehetsneyman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. Now, back to my guest. Yet another form of feedback you wrote about is called recognizing recognition. Which forms of recognition do we tend to miss?
So, you know, I think there's so many and they're different in different workplaces, but being asked to mentor a new staff member, being asked to represent the organization at a conference, being asked to represent the organization at a cocktail party or a fundraiser, being asked to sit on a committee at work. Sometimes it feels like it's just added responsibility and almost like a punishment, like, oh, I have to go and do this, or now I have to, and you know, I've got more stuff on my plate. But it's actually, you know, your businesses are about money. And they're not going to ask you to do something that they don't trust that you are going to do well, and they don't trust you are going to show the business off in a good light. And so even though it might be a little bit of extra work, it is a form of recognition to be asked to represent your organization or to mentor a new member of staff or to sit on a kind of DEI committee or whatever. It is an acknowledgement of your worth and of the value that you add to the organization to be invited to do some of those things. And I think that often those are the things that we don't necessarily recognize as being recognition of us.
Yeah, I think that is a good example of what you do in the book, is to help one make some mind shifts that improve your position at work.
I hope so. I really do. I mean, that really is what I hope that the book will help people to do, is to understand that maybe the way they've been seeing things and perceiving things isn't necessarily the only way to understand it.
In this section of Make Work Work For You, you offer practical ways to help us recognize and reward ourselves. Could you say more about this?
So I think most coaches believe this, but I really believe it is so important that we give ourselves recognition, particularly if we are adult children and judge ourselves without mercy. We have a bad habit of shifting the goalposts. And so we think, if I do this, then, you know, then I'll be pleased. And then we do this. And then, well, if I do that, then I'll be pleased. And so we always upping the ante and setting more and more goals for ourselves, instead of actually just thinking, wow, I've really, you know, I've achieved that. So for instance, I had a client this morning who has really been struggling with a lot of drama in the workplace, and with one of her teams in particular, and it's really been extremely stressful for her. And she just, as a throwaway remark this morning, said there hasn't been any drama this week, and then kind of moved on to the next thing. And I brought her back and I said, I just want you to stop and sit with this for a while. It is huge that you have managed to change how you are at work to such an extent that there has been no drama this week. You need to really recognize that and acknowledge it for yourself, because it's an enormous achievement. And so it's like that we tend to, it's almost like we hardwired to look at the things that we aren't doing well or the things that we need to improve. And we don't pay enough attention to the things that we are doing well and the things that we have improved. And so I think it's important for us to pause and say, wow, no drama this week. Well done, you, and kind of give yourself a pat on the back. And if you want to, you can also give yourself a kind of a concrete recognition. Oh, I'm going to go and have a coffee now to celebrate, or I'm going to buy some flowers on the way home from work to celebrate. And then also, if you have kind of reached a deadline or you know, you send in your manuscript, go out for supper, or the book arrives, have a glass of champagne. It's really important to have those little signposts along the way to signify to you that you are actually making progress.
Now, I'd like to ask you about your programs for teams and individuals, because I know you have Make Work Work For You programs.
So the teams really are, I mean, the programs are based on the book. So they kind of follow the structure of the book. It's about looking at where work, you know, doing the wheel of work to assess where work is working for you as an individual. And also you can do it for your team. There's a team quiz as well. And then depending on, you know, where the majority of the red areas, I suppose, are the areas that need attention, the program then gets tweaked and tailored towards paying more attention to the areas that need to be working better. So they are either a full-day workshop, which is quite intense, but very powerful. It can also be a full-day workshop with a follow-up half-day workshop 6 weeks later, which I think works quite well. People like that because they can check in and kind of do a bit of recalibration, and we can see what needs to be tweaked. Or it's a six-week online program, 2 hours a week for 6 weeks, with a bit of homework in between. So it depends on whether you want to be kind of doing the intensive session or whether you want to do it over the 6 weeks. And then there's also the option of signing up as an individual. So a group of individuals to do the workshop, or a group of individuals to do the online session, or as teams. And I think both are great, but I must say that I think that doing the process as a team is incredibly powerful, because it's hard to be the only person with the information and the skills and to try and change your team as a kind of a lone voice. Whereas if the whole team is doing it, you've got a shared language, you've got a shared understanding, and it just does make change so much quicker and more effective in making work work for you. I also offer burnout prevention workshops in the same format, because burnout is one of the major reasons why work doesn't work for people, and work not working for people is a major reason why they get burnout. And so burnout is a very central part of making work work for you, burnout prevention. So even though it is an aspect of the larger Make Work Work For You programs, I do also have a targeted, focused process for burnout prevention.
Where can listeners learn about these programs and about your work in general?
So I've got a new website which supports the new book, and it's called Make Work Work For You. So it's www.makeworkworkforyou.com that they can go and read about. And then I also have my old website, judyklippin.com, judyklippin.com, which is, it's kind of a bit broader and gives a bit more information, and there are blogs and things on that. So you get a bit more of a sense of how I work and how I have worked historically from the judyklippin.com website. But the Make Work Work For You website is, it's very concise in terms of the work and in terms of the burnout. And it's a kind of quick stop that you can go to and also do that quiz for how well is work working for you or your team.
Yeah. And what I'll do is I'll attach the links to these two websites to the podcast.
Great. Excellent. Thank you.
And Judy, who is the publisher of your book and where can listeners buy it?
So the publisher for all of the books is Bookstorm, which is a South African publisher. And you should be able to buy the book through exclusive books, through some independent bookshops like Love Books, where I'm having the launch. And it is hopefully going to be available on Take A Lot and Loot very soon. It's not there yet, but it should be there in the next couple of days. The Kindle version isn't ready yet. I don't know why it takes a bit longer, but they're hoping in a couple of weeks it should be available on Amazon as well.
Thank you. And as these platforms become active regarding your book, your specific book, we can update the podcast notes. So if you please keep me in the loop as soon as the Kindle version is available, for instance, then I will put all of this on the podcast notes.
Lovely. Thank you. Wonderful.
Now we've come to your three tips on getting the best from yourself.
Okay, so these are the tips that I think are relevant whether you're at work or at home or just generally in the world. So the first tip is that it's so important, I think, for us to understand that we can't change who we are. We are who we are, but we can change how we are. So we can change how we show up in the world by using the tools and the skills that I present in my books. And by changing how we are, we also change how people are around us and how people are with us. And we really do change our whole experience of the world. The second tip is, I think, probably even more important, and that is to really make friends with the idea of it being okay to ask for help. We just create so much hardship for ourselves when we lie, when it's just as easy to tell the truth, and we pretend to be okay when we aren't, and we pretend to understand when we don't. Honestly, asking for help, whether it's asking the shop attendant where they've moved the tomato sauce to, or going to therapy, or asking your spouse to make supper tonight, it doesn't matter. Asking for help is really, really life-changing. And we often feel bad about asking for help because we think that we're going to be imposing on people and making their life difficult. And so I really would like to encourage you all to remember that actually letting people help you is letting people love you. We only want to help people that we love. And so often people we love want to help us and we push it away and we say, I don't need help, I'm okay. And that is pushing away their love. So ask for help and remember that letting people help you is letting people love you. And the third one is related to burnout and burnout prevention. And that is that we really need to treat our energy the same way we treat our money. You know, we are mostly quite responsible about not spending more money than we have, but we aren't as responsible about our energy. And when we spend more energy that we have, and we continue to spend more energy, and we go further and further into energy overdraft, eventually we wake up bankrupt or burnt out. And so we really need to be mindful about spending our energy wisely, spending it on things that are worth it, that are valuable, and making sure that we are not spending more than we have, and that we are making more energy to compensate for the energy that we are spending. So can't change who you are, but you can change how you are. Learn to ask for help. Spend your energy wisely.
Thank you, Judy. I, for one, am going to take those to heart.
Great.
It's time for your fun question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's go to an imaginary world, by which I mean it can be an ideal world. If you could spend one day anywhere without seeing a single other human being, where would you choose to spend this day?
I think it would be the Drakensberg. I think it would be somewhere in a lovely green valley near water, near a river, somewhere in the Drakensberg.
Oh, that sounds delectable. I think I asked that that question because that is what I'd like to do.
Yes, I often say to coaches who I'm training that we should all be wearing mirrored buttons that say, "Who are you talking to?" So, yeah, the Drakensberg.
Thank you, Judy, for these insights coming from your very user-friendly book. And thank you for explaining especially the concepts of reward and recognition that I think we don't always pay attention to.
Thank you so much for inviting me on your podcast and for asking about the reward and recognition aspect, because I think you're right, we do tend to overlook it. So thank you for paying it the attention that I think it deserves.
That's my pleasure. And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series where you download your podcasts. And if this episode inspired you, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes, and for free articles and podcast episodes on how to live a happier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, just search for Mariette Sneeman, journalist. Calm, Clear and Helpful is compiled, hosted and edited by me, with original music by Marthe-Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.